Unlock the door to mystery with one very short story. The micro podcast filled with morally complex characters, twists you won't predict, and endings you won't forget. Every episode is a brief, intense journey, perfect for listeners who crave mystery, intrigue, and stories that leave you thinking long after the tale ends. Today's episode begins now. Netflix superstar. Nate Ellison had once worn a police badge with pride. Now, seeing it on his bedroom dresser, all Nate felt was resentment. His bitterness glowed dully like the sickly light from the flat-screen TV that flickered across the dusty blinds of his one-bedroom apartment, casting shadows that danced like ghosts. On the couch, Nate sat in his stained undershirt and gym shorts, a half-empty bottle of bourbon sweating on the coffee table. The TV volume was muted, but he didn't need sound to know what he was hearing. The news anchor's lips moved around words like vigilante and justice. Then the news footage switched to show some guy from another state. People were calling him a hero. Nate scoffed. He rubbed the scar just below his chin, a remnant from the night everything changed. The night Nate broke into Leon Grevy's house. When Nate was working as a policeman, Leon had been a name in a casual conversation at the police precinct. Two uniforms were gossiping by the coffee machine while Nate was busy at his desk updating reports, the not-so-glamorous side of police work. Grevy lives two blocks from the school, one had said. Creepy bastard. Got off on a technicality. Nate remembered the most important details. Leon Grevy, registered sex offender, wealthy, living alone, no gun. He filed it all in the back of his mind and then told himself that tonight would be the night. Nate kept telling himself he was only at Leon's home to rob the bastard. Yet there was something nagging Nate's neck about the whole thing. He wanted, no needed. Nate needed to make Leon feel powerless and vulnerable. If that happened, then Nate could feel better about himself somehow. And he was desperate for that validation. Violating a man's house would do that. At least that was the logic Nate was working with. When the time came, Nate dressed for the occasion in all black. Gloves, mask, black jeans, the whole nine yards. Nate was going in to steal only what he could carry out, then flee the scene. Easy peasy. But when he stepped into Leon's living room and saw those framed photos, kids at birthday parties, kids at church, kids leaving school, Nate's mind cracked like a windshield under a brick, and he remembered why Leon was a registered sex offender. Kids, pressure built in his chest, steaming hot until it burst. Leon wasn't supposed to be home, but he was, bathing in a tub with the radio on. Classical music was playing. Nate waited until Leon stepped out of the bathroom in a robe and savagely beat Leon with a fireplace poker. Nate didn't stop, not until Leon was dead. Afterward, Nate stood over Leon's body, breathing heavily, blood on his jeans, hands trembling. The house was eerily silent except for the faint voice in Nate's head that said he had it coming. After backtracking his steps and removing any physical evidence of his presence, Nate went home and sat in his car until morning, justifying all that transpired. He told himself killing Leon was an accident. Just rage. Just a moment. But the truth was, Nate knew it was something else, too. Relief. Pleasure. Power. That was 9 months ago. Since then, Nate paid off his alimony in small, quiet installments, enough to keep the lawyers satisfied, but not enough to draw attention. Despite this, his ex-wife, Sharon, still found ways to needle him. "Funny how you've got the cash for that new bike for your niece, but can't seem to pay me on time," she said over the phone, every syllable dripping with venom. Nate hung up before saying something he'd regret. Sharon had always known how to twist the knife, especially about his niece. Nate loved his niece, Miri. She was the only light left in his life. Her laugh made the world less awful. And yet, the moment Sharon weaponized that affection, Nate's teeth ground together with old rage. That night, moments after the verbal abuse from Sharon, Nate searched for and found another name, another predator who would soon be on the receiving end of Nate's rage, a lowlife that preyed on old ladies living alone. Baxter Morgan was his name. No family, no friends, and no problem for Nate. He sent Baxter to the afterlife and smiled when he breathed his last breath, as Nate suspected. No one claimed Baxter's body. Good old Baxter was cremated on the city's dime, like a bag of garbage on trash day. A fitting end. Nate's third victim, Sly Rabinovich, cared a little too much for the animal kingdom. He tried forcing a lady sex worker to indulge his twisted fetish, and when she refused, he pressed harder. The neighbors didn't want to hear the debate, so they called the police, who stepped in to settle things. When they arrived, drunken threats with knives were made by both parties, and they each won a night in jail. Rabinovich and the prostitute both had rap sheets as long as telephone poles. So once the court case boiled down to a he said, she said, the judge couldn't be bothered and tossed the case. Our tax dollars at work. The sex worker disappeared into the ether, never to be seen in town again. In celebration of his get-out-of-jail-free card, Rabinovich sought out another sex worker in hopes that she would be open to entertaining his animal fetish. Unfortunately for him, he ran into Nate and became victim number three. With three kills to his name, Nate realized he was a natural-born killer with a surefire system. Step 1. Tap into his police connections to track down lowlifes who had no business breathing free air. Step 2. Stalk his targets carefully and learn their routines. Step 3. Deliver justice that the courts let slip through the cracks. Nate used to sweat bullets about getting caught. Even wrestled with his conscience over whether killing criminal scumbags was the right thing to do. But after six sexual predators were eliminated from polite society, he felt nothing. Just the faint electrical rush when watching life seep out of his victim's eyes. Nate took every precaution disposing of his kills and leaving no trace of himself behind. Being a cop himself gave him a hefty edge. He knew exactly how the police operated. The more he remained a mystery to the public, the less likely he would get caught. Unfortunately for Nate, despite his best efforts, word of his handiwork got out. A serial killer in the city was ratings gold for the news networks. Christening Nate as some kind of dark angel for taking down sexual predators made for sensational headlines. Nicknames were in abundance: the Equalizer, the Wraith, the Predator Hunter. Cable news went berserk with near 24-hour coverage. Podcasts sprang up like weeds and dissected every vigilante act he committed. Arguments lit up the airwaves. Some called Nate a cold-blooded murderer. Others crowned him a hero. But Nate had no followers, no manifesto. Didn't matter. The media let the masses paint him with all their own ideals. If people had the courage to take out the trash, they would. But why bother when a trash collector was already doing other people's dirty work? The public believed in Nate, a noble soldier, a righteous survivor. Nate was none of those things. He was just Nate. Nate's next mark, intended kill number 7, was another sexual predator, Manny Lopez. Manny had a thing for dead chicks. Sneaking into cemeteries at night to gratify himself was something Manny enjoyed after every successful robbery and illegal gun sale. God knows why. Nate knew Manny didn't deserve to live. His disgusting nocturnal habits were proof of that. What Nate did not know, however, was that the FBI also had an interest in Manny. So when Nate tailed Manny home and broke in, FBI agents were already inside waiting for him. Nate had no excuse. He had become sloppy. With flashlights blinding him and guns drawn, he had nothing to say about his mask, gloves, or the gun in his hand. He just breathed in slightly and muttered, "Shit," as they disarmed him, pinned his hands behind his back, and cuffed him. Bail was sky high. Even after selling his car and putting his house up for sale, Nate couldn't come close to meeting bail. The only silver lining was a private holding cell, bought with whatever goodwill he had left as a seasoned police officer. While Nate stewed, the lawyers circled. The DA smelled an opportunity to advance his career by taking Nate down, especially with an election only months away. Nate knew better than to think he could walk away from this situation. A week into lockup, a reporter came knocking. Marissa Lee, an award winner who looked like she'd grown up too fast. A tiny stick of dynamite in caramel skin, jeans, and a jacket that somehow passed for business. "I'm not here to tell your story," she told Nate. "I want to understand it." Nate hadn't planned on talking to anyone outside of his lawyer, but her voice was steady, her gaze unblinking, and he was lonely. So he spilled everything, like a good Catholic letting his sins roll out in confessional. And Marissa caught every breath of his story on tape. A few weeks later, Marissa's podcast became a sensation. Fans couldn't get enough of it. Dead Man's Justice, 10 episodes. HBO offered a deal, Netflix offered more. The whole situation was surreal to Nate, who spent most of his time trying to remain comfortable in his cell. Some of his old cop buddies checked on him from time to time, but for the most part, they stayed away. Nate didn't blame them. Time passed, and Nate's day of reckoning had come. The courtroom was packed with reporters, true crime fans, and the curious. His ex-wife, Sharon, didn't show up for the trial, but his niece Miri did. She was older now, wiser. Her eyes held questions she couldn't ask, and deep inside, she didn't really want to know the answers. The prosecutor painted Nate as a serial killer with a God complex, a failed cop who became the type of criminal he was supposed to put away. The public defender rebutted, calling Nate a good man who snapped under pressure. His only crime was temporary insanity. The podcast reporter, Marissa, testified on Nate's behalf. His niece, Miri, was a character witness. The public rallied, but the judge didn't flinch. "You do not get to be judge, jury, and executioner," the judge said to Nate, "no matter how noble your intent." The gavel came down hard. Life without parole. Just as Nate expected. Weeks after the trial, Nate lived in a prison cell with a leaking sink and a rusted toilet. He spends his time staring at the ceiling, dreaming of red carpets and awards. He sees Miri holding a scholarship funded by the Netflix adaptation of his life story. He imagines a conjugal visit with Marissa and her calling him the most fascinating man she's ever met. He dreams of being understood as a hero, But none of Nate's dreams were real. His reality? Bruises that don't heal. Guards that look the other way. Cellmates who mock his fall from grace. Neither the guards nor his fellow prisoners saw Nate as a hero. They only saw fresh meat to play with, someone to torture for their amusement. One night, Nate is cornered in the yard. Five inmates attack. No reason, just sport. As they close in, Nate doesn't beg. He just smirks. "Guess I'm still the bad guy," he says. The first punch cracks a rib. The second splits his lip. Nate doesn't scream. Nate only laughs. Not because the beating is funny, but because he finally understands. The hero in his mind was just a coping mechanism. The world didn't want justice for his victims. The world wanted blood, no matter where it came from. Later that day, Netflix flickers in the prison TV room. A dramatization of Nate Ellison, vigilante or psychopath, played to the crowd of inmates. Some booed, some jeered. On screen, a Hollywood actor played Nate with perfect stubble and sorrowful eyes. In the back of the room, Nate watched in silence. His face had been battered into an unrecognizable pulp, but he was still breathing, maintaining focus on the Netflix version of his life story. It began with a narration. Nate Ellison, a secret avenger dispensing justice for the forgotten victims of sexual predators. A selfless hero worthy of respect and admiration. Loved by the people. Hated by the man. And for a moment, a fleeting, cruel moment, Nate almost believes in the version of himself that never existed. Thanks for listening to One Very Short Story. If today's story hooked you, don't forget to like, share, and subscribe. It helps us grow and keeps the suspense coming your way. Want to dive deeper? Check out the podcast description to learn more about the show and explore special offers from our sponsor. Until next time, keep dodging bullets and stay safe in the shadows.